as well.
Yeah, thank you everyone for hanging in here. I do think these are very interesting and important discussions to have. So what I'm going to talk about is part of the experience we had through the Sustainable Intensification Innovation Lab Indicators Project for USAID. We were tasked with, okay, as Jerry said, if we want to monitor research projects, research for development projects, what are the indicators we need to look at to make it, to see if they're following sustainable intensification trajectories. And after these discussions, I've decided I like sustainable intensification, and I might understand more why I'm going to show you there are five domains. And it's precisely for the reasons you point out, to make people more aware of the social and the human dimensions that are very easily forgotten. So I'll try to convince you of that as I go through this. I'd like to recognize my partners in this endeavor, Glenda Snap. Mark, are you still here? Mark Musumba back there. Phil was here for a while. And Phil Gabrowski. We've been working on this for about 2 years. We'll have a launch of this at 5 o'clock. We'll have another smaller presentation that might have been more appropriate now, but you'll have to listen to what I put together for this one and maybe stay for the 5 o'clock talk. So I didn't get any instructions, so I will try to figure this out. That wasn't it. Is there a button I push? Tim?
It could just be the arrows.
I tried that.
These ones.
The other arrow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we put together a framework, and the framework is to guide. Can you guys hear me without that? Or I hold this one. Sorry. A framework for guiding discussions on achieving balanced outcomes for agricultural intensification. You see, I'm calling it agricultural intensification. That is the goal for much of the area where we're working that hasn't intensified yet. It's not to promote a particular set of practices or philosophies. It's to look at agricultural in its entirety, and I said even for developed countries. There will be alternative pathways for different agroecologies, farming systems, cultural preferences, institutions, and policies. So there's not one set of recommendations on what one would consider sustainable. Each pathway has different trade-offs, synergies, and our task is to assess the indicators from different domains, the trade-offs and synergies, and then make decisions to try to balance those trade-offs or take advantage of synergies for the users. And it could be a national level, it could be regional, it could be at a local level. So we just need to be sure the context for which we're putting this together. And I'd like to say it's the trajectory for which these different indicators are moving. You can't take a one-time snapshot and say, well, this is not sustainable. We find nothing sustainable. It's moving towards what we think is a better set of indicators for a particular farming system region. Okay, so let's focus on the change. It's getting people to move towards more desirable outcomes. And that's why I say let's use this framework for those actions to change things for more desirable outcomes. All right, so Jerry already talked about the five domains for sustainable intensification with productivity in the middle, because it's research, agricultural research for development is the context for which we put this framework together. Increasing productivity is a primary goal, but with all of these other domains to be considered and to be focus of this research. Jerry also showed this one. This is just a few of the indicators. There are many, many indicators in this manual we're about to launch. There are far too many, but the point is not everybody should measure all of these things, and that's not the purpose. It's to pick out what are the relevant indicators for a particular project or for a particular program. And so that's why you have to have a huge list. People keep saying, I'll have a small list. As soon as we share that small list together, everybody says, no, you forgot this, this, and this. So we put in this, this, and this, and it's really for the stakeholders to decide what's relevant for their objectives, right? So these are just a few of them here. And scale, I'll bring up scale again. Yes, most agriculturalists look at the field level. They often don't even consider the farm level. So we put this together to get researchers to start thinking about other domains and start thinking about scales. What might happen if I do this particular intervention on this field? How might it impact the farm, the family, and the landscape? So a lot of what we put together is to get people to be more aware of what sustainable intensification is about and what it involves. All right, so this is the pathway of all agricultural begins. You look at crops, production, stocks of nutrients, flows, biodiversity, carbon, the internatural system, you clear it, and all of those increase. That's just happened around the world, wherever you do it. And the system becomes degraded. So all of our indicators decrease. Now, what we want to do in those systems is to intensify, so you have higher crop productivity. That requires inputs, nutrients, water, labor, capital. It won't happen without that. You'll just stay on that degraded curve throughout. Okay? That's what intensification is measured by economists in many ways. Agronomists usually measure it in terms of yield, increasing yield. So we have to look how those fit together or look at efficiency of use. Here's where I want to talk about context, and I do think this framework can hold for almost anywhere in the world. So you'll see I put Kenya sort of on the degrading side. I put the US and China, and this is terms of crop production only, increasing crop production. Kenya very low, US and China very high. I'll now take this forward and look at some other indicators that are related to this changes in crop production. That one's out of order. Anyway, so let's say we use all the inputs. You're increasing crop productivity. What are the synergies? What are the good outcomes besides increased production that can happen? People always talk about trade-offs, so I will start with synergies. A lot of good can happen. Might be food security. It might free up labor. Might make more labor. But that's what you need to be aware of as you increase your inputs for these systems. And so we have put together, Mark and Phil put together exercises for researchers to actually go through and look at what will happen with their interventions. Not only increasing production of crops or livestock, but what might be some of the unintended consequences. Again, it's an awareness framework to get people to move towards more sustainable interventions. All right, back to Kenya, China, and the US. So here, look at crop productivity. That's one of our indicators. Maize yields, 1.5 tons, North China Plains. 8.2 tons, Midwest US. Western Kenya, 2 tons. Look at the inputs. This is nitrogen only. We've done it for phosphorus also. 500, almost 207. Those are other indicators. How are you intensifying? What is the degree of intensification? A better question might be, how much should they be putting on to achieve an optimal yield? But that's not the question that was put to them at this point. Then the outputs. What I want to put in is this partial nitrogen balance. And I would like to propose that this could be a very good integrating indicator to start looking at systems from the environmental side. Obviously in China they're adding way too much nitrogen and it's sitting around in the soil to be lost by various ways. In the US there's a lot of debate about this, but this is one data set and it's become at this point almost in balance. Kenya, minus 52 kilograms per hectare per year. Mining the soil over and over, not sustainable. Nor is the China system sustainable in terms of this one particular indicator. So what do you learn from these? Well, the Chinese actually went through this and developed alternatives. How can they keep their yields at 8.5 tons, but minimize some of the environmental impacts. So this is just reactive nitrogen losses. I'd like you to just focus on maize down there. The orange is leaching. So current practice, leaching is between 50 and 100. Then they have an improved practice, it takes it between 50 and 25. The high yielding system they put together, it's well over 100. And then they call what is an integrated soil system management. And it's intermediate. The point is, for most of these systems, they've not changed yields, except for the high yielding one. But they've decreased some of the emissions that they were getting, and some of the leaching.
So I think they've used this idea of too much application of nutrients. They've cut it back by 40% in the improved management system. And yields have increased in many cases. So they're looking at their data and figuring, okay, what do we need to do to have this be more sustainable? They have a program called Sustainable Intensification in China. And so that's a highly productive country that is very concerned about certainly the environmental aspects. Here's data from Kenya. My colleague Kate Tully in the back there and Jonathan Hickman looked in these Kenya sites. All right, so you look at, there are different treatments, nitrogen application rates, 0, 50, 75, and 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. Normally people are using about 20, okay? So this is looking at two different places, one, a clay soil in Kenya, and a sandy soil in Tanzania. If you look at the scales of leaching, which is blue, it's between 50 and 25, even at 75 kilograms per hectare. It increases slightly at 200. If you look on the sandy soil in Tanzania, however, leaching is much higher. Greenhouse gas emissions are almost negligible. And so Jerry said, don't put greenhouse gas emissions for Africa. We don't want to know what they are because they're not really contributing. But
I didn't say we didn't want to know what they were.
You didn't want it as an indicator. You didn't want it as an indicator, but I do think it's important that people like Kate are out there measuring these types of things and put it in perspective with other places. So the point is, it's all context specific and what's sustainable. Okay, you can put the same rate in Kenya, you drive down 500 kilometers, you put it on a sandy soil in Tanzania, and it's a totally different story. Okay, so it's context specific, and I've heard people say that before. Keep that in mind. Where are you on that intensification curve? What kind of soil are you on? What kind of climate do you have?
How am I doing time-wise here? Okay. Now I'm just going to jump. We're talking about the environment, so I'm just going to, everybody else did this much better than I did, but I do think this is the big elephant in the room. We don't know what's happening at landscape scales. We can tell you a lot about farmland. We can't tell you a farm very well, let alone the landscape. So I think this is the way to go for young researchers. This is really, if you want sustainable intensification, we need to know what happens. I'm sorry, I don't have a pointer. These are two very different landscapes. Trees, very different configurations. Nutrients will move very differently. Insects will move very differently. And we don't know what's going to happen to pest populations. Even greenhouse gas emissions are extremely different based on landscape configuration. Methane can be absorbed in some, released in others. We don't know that. So to me, that is the real crux for sustainable intensification. I think we can think about the field quite well. We're getting better about a farm, but I think we don't have a very good idea of landscape. Okay, so I've talked about environment. As you said, everybody talks about the environment, so why not call it ecological intensification? So let's say, what about some of these human and economic indicators? So basically, when farmers cut a forest and start farming, they take the natural capital and it increases their income, food security, and even nutrition security, but only for a short while. And then it degrades along with
all the other ecosystem services.
So I'm just going to put up different data sets to make you start thinking about intensification and other human indicators. Here's one on agricultural intensification and diet diversity and what happens with stunting. So usually diet diversity is associated with reduced stunting. This is from several countries. As you increase the number of crops, stunting is on the y-axis. You increase the number of crops, stunting decreases. Okay, more stunting is the bigger negative number. It's shown for many places, okay? With intensification, what happens? We usually lower diversity. And so that's a trade-off. You have to be very conscious of that trade-off and what you might need to do to change that trade-off. Here's some work that we did in Ghana. And this is cash crops. People think, okay, farmers make more money, they're going to use that money to feed their families, and nutritional outcomes will be better. Well, there's a lot of studies that show, yes, the income goes up from those families that have cash crops, but the jury is out. 50% of the studies show nutritional outcomes improve, the others say, no, they don't at all. And so, it's the context, and I think people are just starting to look at the context under which you can get a synergy between cash cropping and nutrition. This is just looking at the amount of land Ghanaian farmers put under cocoa and oil palm, and the different measurements of food security, availability, access, and utilization. The richer farmers who have more cash land, they have more availability, but they have less utilization, okay? So there are, you have to look at the various aspects of food security, or nutrition security, and how cash cropping might affect those. There are some cash crops that seem to do better than others, but there are very few syntheses on them so far. Some of the best studies were done in the 90s, and they haven't been repeated. Nutritionists are working on that now, but again, we can't assume nutritional security is going to go up with intensification. In fact, many things are telling us it might actually be a detriment. Okay, so this is work from Siglinda Snap and Phil and their team at Michigan State. Sig will tell it to you better, but this is very quickly. They have these trials in Malawi, where they compare unfertilized maize to fertilized maize to maize pigeon pea intercropping to double up legumes, groundnut pigeon pea maize intercrop with maize. And so they looked at many indicators. They had foresight to see what these interventions might do. I'm just going to go through these very quickly. I'm not going to explain them because it's... So this is just, as Jerry showed some of these, but if you look at unfertilized maize versus fertilized maize, which is green, you see you get more residues, you get more net income, the food sufficiency probability goes up, and many things like that compared to no fertilize. Then you start adding the maize pigeon pea, double up legume, you can see many of the other social factors, environmental factors going up. Women prefer the fertilized maize. Interesting. One might not have expected that, except probably labor and things like that. But it's only once you start looking at all these different indicators can you figure out what system might get you this bigger volume, sustainability volume, and what might you need to tweak in that system so that those are adopted. And I think we need more and more people in the field looking at this for different farming systems to really start making these assessments. And then Jerry and his team can really then make better recommendations. And there's not one bullet, okay, that's going to get everybody towards sustainability. But what are the better options for different groups? These relationships they've done at many places in Malawi. A district over, they're dramatically different. So it's context specific. You have to really look at it.
The one thing I didn't mention very much about is gender, and you have to bring that in, and they will change. Some of that cash cropping, it's usually male-dominated. Female households don't do as well, but we heard this morning in the USAID thing, the nutritional outcomes are very much related to the education also of the female in the household. So there are other factors that we often don't even think of that will affect our outcomes, and how do we integrate those?
Can I see the indicators? I mean,
the next one?
I think there's another.
That one?
Is it the finalized version of the framework?
Well, the finalized version, the finalized for as of today, at 5 o'clock, we actually have soft copies and hard copies we'll distribute.
Right.
No, these are just a few of them. I say there are lots and lots of indicators, because the more we cut it down, the more people said you have to add these because they're specific to certain systems.
Right.
So this is just a subset.
I mean, this is going to be useful for us as well, because we are trying to develop indicators for UK as well. So this one thing, this is great work, and it sort of reflects all the different dimensions that people are talking about. So it has social, economic, productivity, environment, and human. So but one thing, I don't know if it's worth considering, probably the intensification of process dimension is probably missing there. So how are we thinking of achieving these outcomes? For example, if I apply GM, for example, and that leads to productivity and also lots of welfare gains, will that be sustainable intensification?
I prefer to not get into a GM debate at this point. But you could put that in there. I mean, there is something about agrodiversity, so it says crop type, variety, whatever. That could go in there. So it could be a very apparent indicator if you wanted it to be so. Jerry, maybe you could help.
Well, I would just quickly respond to Pat and your commenter. I don't need it.
Probably not. But
we do have people in the far corner. So on Pat's comment, good comment. We've seen some great mapping work using sort of the principles of precision agriculture, but at landscape scale. For example, ICRISAT and IITA and other partners took plot level information, farm level information, and then mapped whole landscapes to make recommendations about the appropriate targeting and dissemination of innovation packages based on biodiversity, soil type, etc. So they were really precisely targeting within a big landscape where intervention should be disseminated. GM introduction of GM maize could that be considered sustainable intensification? I think our general consensus is that we don't want to be prescriptive, but we want it outcome-based. So if the introduction of a GM crop increased these indicators or improved these outcomes, then that's great. You could imagine a situation whereby maybe a farmer in Tanzania grows maize and then can't sell it on the international market, and that might really decrease the profitability, something like that. So it's the outcome of introducing a GM crop or a hybrid maize or a chemical fertilizer, not the technology itself, that determines whether it sustainably intensified that system.
And just to add, if there is a stakeholder group that just doesn't want to have GM crops, that can be an indicator, right? And so it's for stakeholders to determine what's important for their particular purpose.
So we have this set of outcomes that we want to achieve. Now it's the stakeholders to decide which
ones are important for their particular vision of a sustainable system.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
So a question over here in the corner. So get my question. You might
have so my question is, and I guess we'll learn more about this framework later, I guess, but you have this list of five domains and different indicators, there's a risk that you could choose whatever ones are better for your specific purpose. And so I'm wondering if you have, as part of the framework, some kind of guidelines on how to choose the indicators. That's one question. And then the other question is, how do we move, which was the question of the whole workshop, I guess, is that, you know, how do we move beyond the trade-off? Is system A or system B more sustainably intensified in that slide, where the environmental benefits are higher in system B, but lower in A, but the productivity is... Is there a way to address these trade-offs? Have you thought about that? Or?
So, in answer to the first question, selection of indicators. So again, Mark Masumba, Phil Grabowski, Phil is over here again, have put together some very good exercises on how, and it makes people think about what their project is, its objectives, and then what indicators are needed to answer that, to follow that. And then they take it another step to make people think about indirect consequences. It's very hard. People always think what they're doing is great, right? And so to get people to think about trade-offs is much harder than one thinks. And so that's why we say you really need an interdisciplinary team to select those indicators. You need a sociologist, you need a gender expert, or things like that. You need an environmental person. Very often, research for development, ag for development, is agronomists. And it's to really wake them up to what the broader implications of what they are doing are for sustainable intensification. So about what's more sustainable, system A and system B, again, it's relevant to the stakeholders and what their objectives are. And the stakeholder might be a cooperative, it might be a local government, it might be a national government. And only through their dialogue can they figure out what is best for them, or if there's something wrong with system B, they'd like to move it more towards A, how might they do that? Okay? So it's to really provide comparisons of alternatives and then make decisions. Somebody has to make those decisions, whether it's a farmer, farming cooperative, local government, or national government. But again, that's not for us to say. It's to provide tools for people to try to make those decisions. Difficult decisions.
There's two more questions over here, and I think we're going to shift into the next section.
So after Valentine's question, I think one of the interesting things about standardizing, you know, having a set out of this is that we get data out of it after people start implementing it. And one of the examples that you provided about the numerous studies on cash crops improving food access and food security. So my unpublished research, what I found in Haiti was that in the region I was working, based on the amount of land farmers were devoting to different crops, the relationship to food security was specific. Did some cash crops worse, some better, and there wasn't any trends like a relationship to legumes or cereals, cash crops. And so that's part of one of the things about having a standardized setup where you're evaluating the social, economic, and the ecological domain of that, and eventually there's more like data coming out of that. So the concern is that if people can kind of choose what they want for their region, you can go back to the same phenomenon we've always had of going back to our biases of what's the most important dimension of quote unquote sustainability for your project, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a danger, but we try to lay things out so that people, it's in front of them with questions to ask, okay? Mm-hmm. So they at least start to think about them. And I think once you start getting people to really think about it, it becomes part of their thinking process in their research. We've found some amazing examples out in Mark and Phil have been to six different countries and tried it out, and we found some amazing comments. Once people have to go through, especially the trade-offs and synergies, they're surprised at some of them. So it gets them to think, and I think that's the first step.
Yeah, the